Mark Collier here with For Thomas Matters Radio, joined by Darren Murner today. For Thomas Matters Radio, always brought to you by Omega Processing Solutions. Did you know that one of the nation's top-rated merchant processing companies calls For Thomas home? It is Omega Processing Solutions, and we're proud to partner with them with For Thomas Matters Radio. If you need some assistance with your merchant processing, you can give them a call at 442-8100, 442-8100, or visit them at omegap.com. Darren, how are you, man?
Good.
So you've been on the podcast. What is this, three or four times?
I think so. Yeah.
You're like the Steve
this is
Martin.
A lot of fun.
The Steve Martin SNL for Thomas Matters Radio. So welcome you back. What we're going to talk about today is some city issues here in Fort Thomas. We've got some houses that are going up pretty rapidly that we're going to talk about. Not a lot of people really know that there's even space to build in Fort Thomas, but apparently there is.
We still keep finding space somehow.
little bit of talk on the speed limits. We've had some op-eds run on Fort Thomas Matters by former school board, member Scott Johnson. So we're going to talk about some speed limits in Fort Thomas. Of course, we've got the holiday walk that is coming up here on Sunday, which is always a great event. Darren is front and center of that. You live right over there, right?
Yeah, we walk to the end of the street. It's awesome.
And then, of course, Adam Meyer, the news broke on Fort Thomas Matters last week that Adam Meyer, now former city councilman Adam Meyer, is going to take a high-level leadership position in the Matt Bevin administration. So a little bit of fallout on that. But first, what I want to talk about is the speed limits in Fort Thomas. Obviously, most of the city streets here are 25 miles per hour. Even on some of the shortened streets, dead-end streets, cul-de-sac streets. And for whatever reason, that has been brought up at city council over the last, really, I know Ken Bowman made it an issue when he was campaigning last year, and it's kind of crept its way back in. You live on Lumley,
right? Yeah. You used to live there too.
I did. I moved right next door, and maybe we can get into the story about the birth of Fort Thomas Matters one day. That is a story for a different podcast. But tell us, I guess, your experience. You live on not a main street. It's kind of a loop around to the avenue. So tell me your personal.
Yeah, so I mean, Lumley, if anybody's driven through there or has lived or had family that's lived, it seems like every time I meet someone new in Fort Thomas, they're like, oh, my cousin or my aunt or someone used to live on Lumley. But if you've ever driven back to Shaw or Miller, you usually loop back around on Lumley. And yeah, I mean, we're raising three small kids, 8 and 5-year-old twins, and on that street, and it is harrowing. And, you know, I think the interesting thing is, you know, you and I talked about this before we kind of got onto the podcast, but I don't know that the speed limit is the issue on the street. It's just people observing the speed limit. And I know it's really easy to throw up one of those little speed signs that remind people how fast they're going. I just don't think any of those things really matter. And, you know, unfortunately, the only thing that I've seen that's really been much of a deterrent on these streets are the speed humps, which, you know, is controversial. And I remember a few years ago when Melanie Etheridge worked to try to get the speed humps on Southgate. And, you know, it was kind of quite an uproar over that. But it's like, man, I don't know how you slow people down. And, you know, you drop the speed limit to 15 or 20 or whatever you do it to, it's not really going to matter. And, you know, Lumley, it's you kind of pick up speed going down the hill. It's
sure.
Got the little dip in the middle of the street. And, you know, by the time you get halfway down the street, you're easily going 35. And it doesn't matter what the posted speed limit is
on
the street.
And you know, you look at the op-ed that was written, some of the comments on our Facebook page and on our website, and they basically circle around what you said, which is at the end of the day, it's personal responsibility. And, you know, I think probably if you know, you could look at studies that say, you know, accidents go down at, you know, X miles per hour, 20 miles per hour, 15 miles per hour. But how do you enforce good right. behavior?
Yeah.
And I think that is probably the main question in this whole thing.
Yeah. And I, you know, I wouldn't advocate our police officers spending their time on side streets and, you know, enforcing speed limits. And I think about how that would even be practical on our street. 'Cause in a lot of cases, there's just not even available on street parking spots.
Right.
So, I mean, it's a hard thing to, I think, kind of enforce outside of, you know, and what I see, I feel like that the old man on the street, you know, yelling at the cars driving by now.
Sure.
Because it's usually younger kids, like teenagers or, you know, kids that are coming home from college or whatever. And they just, you know, I'm sure they're not doing it intentionally. It's just they're not paying attention and they've not really thought about kids running out into the street.
Sure. As you don't when you're younger. Let me read a little bit of the op-ed today. And this is from, again, Scott Johnson. He says, quote, having been a crusader on this subject 15 years ago after 10-year-old Stevie Schroeder was a victim of vehicular homicide by a careless motorist on Garrison, a cut-through street, I spent countless hours over a year with council and its public safety committee just trying to get simple speed limit and children at play signs on West Southgate, which he did, a cut-through street which also had no signs. Our premise was that public awareness campaign of adequate signage along with stepped-up side street police patrols would improve the situation, although it would not eliminate the risk altogether. So, kind of talks about what you did, which a little he deviates. He does want a little bit stepped-up police patrols,
yeah.
Which you know I haven't looked at the studies. It seems logical, but again, at the same time, it seems logical, yes, but is it practical and how do you put it into play?
Well, and I think the other piece of that too is, you know, once the police officers are gone, like they do that for a couple of weeks, and yeah, I mean, people might be reminded of that for a few months afterward, but you kind of settle back into similar patterns. And I think, you know, the speed humps, I would guess, and it'd be interesting to talk to the people in West Southgate if, you know, if they feel like that was effective. But I mean, we just haven't heard any issues on Southgate anymore. And at one point on Lumley, they actually did have speed humps, but they didn't go across the entire street. And so what ended up happening was people would zigzag.
It'd create like an obstacle course.
Right. And it actually kind of was even more entertaining for people to kind of speed through it.
Yeah.
And then they took them out and that was it. And it's like, well, if we're going to go there, go all the way. And so that's, I feel like the only real way that you can do it because people don't want to rip the bottom out of their car.
All right. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, yeah, you can step up police patrols and that'll be a short term, you know, I guess deterrent, but the neighbors on the street complaining, it's how much can the city take of that complaining before
yep.
something happens.
Yep, absolutely.
And again, I think people are mainly circling around this same thing, which is they don't want people to speed, obviously. It's just how do you get that kind of cooperation from the residents without it being overly burdensome tax-wise or putting your resources out police-wise and making sure that everybody right. lives. And really the one thing that I think the one mistake that was made in this whole thing was, and this might just be a factor of her on her way out, but I think it was our last meeting when Mary Brown said that this was a parent issue. The speeding was a parental issue, which I'm not sure that anybody would agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, I can't, you know, talk about the definition of helicopter parents. I mean, I'm not interested in sitting on my front porch and, you know, nitpicking every single thing that my kids do. I mean, I harp on them regularly about, you know, looking both ways when they cross the street or waiting for an adult or a parent to cross with them. But, you know, at the end of the day, you just can't be there for every single situation. On Lumley, as an example, just our little stretch of Lumley, there are 23 kids between the ages of 4 and 10. And I mean, when you get that many kids wandering back and forth to other people's houses and, you know, chasing balls out into the street, it's just impossible to police that as parents. And
it's impossible to police it as parents, and it's impossible for the police to enforce it
absolutely
throughout the city.
Yeah.
For what it's worth, Scott Johnson's solution says, and this is a quote, the solution is to post 20 mile per hour on all residential side streets, along with children at play signs, while having our police engage in risk management by patrolling high child mortality risk side streets instead of low risk roads like Memorial Parkway and 471.
Yeah.
So, for what it's worth, moving on. Houses are popping up in Fort Thomas,
yeah,
and you get through, and people that don't live here, they would be surprised to hear that. And really, if it's on the other side of town and you don't drive on the other side of town, you might be surprised to see what's going on. For instance, you talked about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's the open lots on Grand Avenue there's houses springing up on that. Actually, right across the street, there were, you know, two or three lots that kind of got squeezed in between a house there that kind of butts up against Highland Baptist Church. And those have been built out, obviously, since then. But, you know, in addition to that, you have Bivouac kind of on the hillside. They're, I think, looking at three lots there. And then on Newman, there's, I think, two or three lots they're squeezing in, basically, in someone's front yard. And, you know, there's been a few other kind of little houses wedged in here or there as of late. And I think part of that's just kind of the economy coming back and people are willing to, you know, kind of step out and do some home building now. But, you know, I when I think about places to build in Fort Thomas, I mean, the only other places I can think of are the wooded lots on River Road, you know, where it's like there's a little gap between where they built new homes. And, you know, but beyond that, if you go, you know, if you follow Newman to Chesapeake, and I know that kind of at some point becomes, you know, Woodlawn, and some point becomes
Newport.
I don't know where all those dividing lines start and stop, but there's probably another four or five lots right there that, you know, are for sale and have signs out as well. So part of what I always think about when I see that is how it seems like every decade our census numbers decline in the city of Fort Thomas. And, you know, when you look at our schools are bursting at the seams. I mean, like, that's the reason why we're getting new schools now, finally, thank
yeah
God. But it's like, how in the world are we losing population when that's happening? And then we've got new apartment buildings springing up.
Well, and I think that's a good point. There's a whole lot of can of worms with this whole issue. There's schools, there's, you know, how do you fit all that kind of stuff in? And a lot of those houses down Newman and then Chesapeake, those are not in the Fort Thomas school district. So that's kind of one issue. Now,
I think the ones on Newman are.
Yeah, Newman.
The new ones will be.
Yeah. So that's a whole issue altogether. Like, and I know a lot of the people that live back there have petitioned and tried to.
Right. Especially in Villa Grande.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because those are high level, high income homes. Those are high property value homes. And their whole issue is, you know, why wouldn't you want to bring us into the school district? And I don't think that, you know, I don't think that the schools can. It's districted for...
Sounds like it's a Campbell County issue.
Yeah,
I think the other piece that they've always been concerned about, too, is they have to get bused out to Campbell County, which is just, you know, that's a pretty long haul.
Yeah, I'm sure most of them don't. I'm sure most of them take them to private schools.
I'm sure, yeah.
And just kind of delay the decision until... You know, they've got to go to high school or elementary school or wherever. So that's one issue. Another issue is, and you mentioned the homes on, where was it, Newman, where they're kind of butting up towards one
basically
another.
Basically in someone's front yard.
Yeah, and quick story about that. I remember, you know, usually when the city, those types of things happen, the city will plaster, you know, notices to telephone poles or whatever, notifying the neighbors, hey, there's been a request to, you know, change the property lines or ask for easements or whatever. And basically they tell the neighbors through this via putting up a flyer on the telephone pole. Well, 9 times out of 10, nothing happens. The neighbors read it. They walk on by. They're walking their dogs or whatever, and nothing happens. Well, in this instance, the neighbors didn't want this to happen. So I think it was a planning commission meeting that they showed up to, and they made it known, hey, we're not okay with this. And nothing happened. So, you know, it's one of those things where you think, you hope that your city officials will listen to you. And maybe they did in this instance. And I just don't know, you know, all the details. But I do know that, you know, a large majority of the neighbors there did not want that to happen.
Yeah.
They went, they showed up, they made their arguments, and it did happen. Yeah. So I do think, to tie a ribbon on this whole thing, I think the economy is definitely the driving force of this, which also, you know, speaks to Adam Meyer's program that he had campaigned on, Pretty the City. Would these houses that are now being either built or improved upon under his plan, I don't know if you know too much about
his
plan,
it.
But would this Pretty the City initiative, would these homes and these improvements fall under that?
Yeah.
And then if they do, are we costing the city money? Is it now not revenue neutral? So those are all questions that all these homes springing up kind of brings to the forefront now.
Right, absolutely.
It's a good news thing. Obviously, you want a higher tax base, yeah. But at the same time, you don't want the city to lose money on the deal.
You know, I mean, I think it is a good sign, right? I mean, people want to be in Fort Thomas. People want newer housing. I mean, we see it all the time where people build on an addition to the back of their house that's, you know, twice as big as their original home. And I think you have to kind of replace the housing stock in a community over, you know, a 100-year period or something. Otherwise, it becomes, you know, not a pleasant place to live.
For sure. And I think on Adam's Pretty the City initiative, his main goal, because he did this at his house, was to kind of transform that housing stock from a lot of the quad family and duplex family homes, yep. two-style homes, to convert them to single-family homes. Yep. And in his plan, he basically said that, you know, if you do these things, presumably the new home would be worth, you know, at a much higher rate if it was a single-family home versus duplex.
Do you know if he was offering city incentives for that? Was that part of the plan?
I think what he was doing was basically saying there's a tax moratorium for 5 years.
Yeah.
So if you decide to change
it's a good idea.
To change your home, like when I moved next door to you, that was a duplex home.
And it could easily be a single family.
Easily.
I think it was originally built as a single family.
So let's say, for instance, you know, that home is worth $150,000 as a duplex family. You transition it to a single family home, and now it's worth, you know, $250,000.
Right.
So the city would not recognize it as a $250,000 home for 5 years. They would recognize it as a $150,000 home for 5 years. The incentive to do that would be that, you know, you only pay taxes on a lower value for 5 years.
Sure. It's the same thing that the city of Cincinnati did in the last 15 to 20 years in terms of tax abatements. And I mean, I think it's a good start. You know, 5 years, obviously you're not going to recoup some of the differential. And,
right.
You know, like I think about the place next door and, you know, when you think through like what it would cost to actually convert that to a single family, I mean, realistically, they probably need a 20 or 30 year tax abatement. That's,
sure. And you know, those are just hypotheticals. Right. Like nothing has been even submitted yet. I went through the Northern Kentucky Area Development District and they got a draft together, which I know Adam is frustrated about because this is kind of his baby.
Right.
And it's been through now, you know, two committee meetings. It's been through city council. We're in December now. He's been on council for 11 months and it's still hanging out there, and this is a perfect transition
to Adam's new role.
Yeah, Adam's he's resigning his position, and so he, if this Pretty the City initiative goes through, he will not be on council to see it through, I don't think. There are some, you know, dates and deadlines to how this whole thing will work, and I think it has to do with, you know, one thing is the date that he actually resigns, which is when, you know, he gets the letter into the city. And then they actually have to have a, you know, a convening of council for it to be official. So as soon as that gavel drops at the very next council meeting, then it's official.
Official.
And then they get 30 days to appoint somebody, and if nobody is appointed, then the governor appoints somebody. They'll appoint somebody. So Adam has a humongous leadership role with the Bevin Association or administration now, and it's a really good thing for him. There's no way that he could pass up the opportunity. It's a really good thing for Northern Kentucky and for Thomas because, you know, presumably he knows our area better than anybody. And I'll tell you this personally, like, nobody knows how to research things better than Adam Meyer.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to be great at this.
Well, I mean, we talked about that, right, in the last, I think it was the last podcast, or maybe it was two podcasts ago, but just about kind of the Bevin win and what it meant for Northern Kentucky. And, you know, we kind of speculated on who out of Northern Kentucky might be candidates. And so, I mean, it turned out to be closer to home than what, you know, we were even mentioning on the podcast. But I think it's got to be a positive. I'd love to see kind of how it translates. I mean, obviously, we have a lot of high priority projects and, you know, things that it would be great to have more influence in Frankfort for.
For sure.
So hopefully he's able to translate that, you know, and I hope he's not the only one kind of in that administration.
Well, and if you look throughout the state, I mean, Matt Bevin is getting really high marks for who he has hired. And that includes Adam Meyer. Yeah. Like, people throughout the state now know his name, and they're looking at him like, you know, he is probably, of everybody that he has hired, probably the, you know, one of the least known.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be, he's a rising star. I've said it from day one. We were lucky to get him on Fort Thomas City Council. I know personally that if you ask him to research something, he's going to find the right answer.
Yeah,
he is. Yeah, and whether, you know, now he's got a little bit more of a partisan position in Matt Bevin's administration, which is one of the reasons that he had to resign. He's going to work his butt off for Northern Kentucky and the state of Kentucky now.
Yeah,
it's so exciting. Yeah, Adam Meyer, congratulations. It's a good thing for Fort Thomas. It's a good thing for Northern Kentucky, and it's a good thing for the state. And then finally, the Holiday Walk is coming up this Sunday, December 6th. It'll go from 5:30 to 8 o'clock. Tell me about your favorite thing about the Holiday Walk.
Gosh, I don't know that I have a favorite thing, but my kids sure do love it. I mean, you know, being able to just walk from store to store, you know, the kind of festiveness of the street and just seeing everybody out. I mean, it was one of the great things about this summer when they did the art walk on the Fridays. And, you know, it's just kind of seeing everybody out, sense of community, people walking around, supporting small businesses.
For sure.
And I just think that in and of itself is, for me personally, the thing that I enjoy the most. And I just think the kids love it. I mean, every year they are so excited about, you know, they remember little small details about what kind of candy they got from which store and, you know, which person dressed up in some sort of costume was, you know, out front handing out, who knows. So I think this year, and I don't know if you've heard any updates, but I know there was kind of a push to kind of get the donut shop opened in time for the Holiday Walk. I'm not sure they're going to make that.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be open by that, but I could almost guess that
they would use that as a marketing opportunity.
They're going to be probably in there doing something, as will Colonel D's. You know, that lobby is going to be filled too, I'm sure. Dan Gorman has done an awesome job with the Highland building.
It looks so much better.
It really does, even from the outside. I mean, you can see into the lobby. It looks amazing. Horse and carriage is going to run the entire length of the track from 5:30 to 8 o'clock. Santa's going to be at the firehouse with the Highlands Symphonia, the strings. You're going to have the train at the clock tower. It's an awesome event. And I'll say this too. Like, I think that this event and art around town and things like that, that are smaller, that all of, it seems like a lot more of the community that when you're walking around, you know, everybody, I'd much prefer those events to like the huge ones like Merchants and Music,
right, or I agree.
Or yeah, whatever. It, you can do it at a lower rate. It doesn't cost the city as much as those big events. And It just feels homier.
Well, and frankly, I think you have an opportunity to really actually get to know your neighbors and meet your neighbors a little bit more effectively in an event like that, as opposed to kind of jamming everybody into a small space. And
yeah, I remember too last year, and or maybe it was 2 years ago, some of the businesses, they told me the same thing. You know, I had an awesome time. I met a lot of great people. I made a lot of good business contacts, and that's what it's about, providing, you know, quality of life experiences for your residents. And at the same time, how do you mesh that with
supporting the businesses?
It's got to be a win-win for both. And I think these events they do it much better.
Yeah.
Well, those are four quick hitter events and issues that we've talked about: the houses, the speed limit, the holiday walk, and Adam Meyer's transition to Matt Bevin's team. Darren, appreciate you being here, as always.
Thanks, man. It was fun.
My tag team partner on the FTM radio broadcast. You can always see our archives at fortthomasmatters.podbean.com, or you could go to iTunes or Google Play and just simply type in Fort Thomas Matters. All of our podcasts will get brought up there. And you can subscribe there as well. There's also a tab at the top of fortthomasmatters.com. It says podcasts. There's a tab, and you can access all of those there. Once again, for Omega Processing Solutions, Darren Murner, and our other podcast sponsor, which is City Barbecue, City Barbecue of Highland Heights, located at 2760 Alexandria Pike, right next to Fort Thomas Jewelers. You can see their menu and their catering menu as well at citybbq.com. That's citybbq.com, or call them at 415-4544. It's 859-415-4544. This has been Mark Collier for Thomas Matters Radio.